This is a podcast from WILL AM 580. To support our station, please visit www.willpledge.org. That's www.willpledge.org.
This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast for Tuesday, September 12th. I'm Tom Rogers. Coming up, Legal Issues in the News looks at the justice process for some of the most well-known terror suspects in U.S. custody. And AM 580 meteorologist Ed Kieser will have a look at our weather. First, a look at today's news. Urbana homeowners should prepare for a rising property tax next year. Last night, the City Council's Committee of the Whole voted preliminarily for a possible tax hike of up to 12% due to a foreseen increase in property values, while the tax rate would stay the same. But Urbana's mayor, Laurel Prussing, hopes to actually lower the tax.
Because right now, all we have is an estimate from the township assessor. And the final assessed valuation won't be known until next spring. So we will lower this number.
The city wants to use the higher tax revenue to cover inflation and rising expenses like pension and health care costs. Republican council member Heather Stevenson voted against higher property taxes to even out the budget.
I think that there's areas of our budget that we can cut so that our constituents don't have to every year see an increase in their taxes, because whether it's to the city or to the schools or whatever the case may be, when they write that check, the bottom line is it affects their pocketbooks.
Many homeowners came to the council meeting last night to address their concern about the proposed tax hike, but how much will effectively cost the taxpayer remains open until next year. Sofas on Urbana's porches may see a few more seasons yet. The council didn't vote for a ban of indoor furniture and outdoor locations last night. Instead, it agreed to reconsider the initial ban. Council member Danielle Chenoweth feels that a total ban might compromise residents' liberties.
People hang out on their porches. They say hello. People come pet my chickens. They bring, you know, it's a weird place, but we do these kinds of things in Urbana, and I just don't feel like we're the kind of community that legislates what people put on their front porch, unless that thing is a safety hazard.
How the old sofas or armchairs look isn't the issue. Rather than a total ban, council members, including Mayor Laurel Prussing, are agreeing to restrict only furniture that might harbor pests if left outside.
If it's furniture on the porch that has become infested by mice or bugs or whatever, that's the nuisance that we would like to control. We're saying, we don't like the look of it, that's one thing, but it's not really a public issue until it's a health issue.
In the next few weeks, the city council hopes to find a legal solution to the issue. One possible way could be regular checks by the city's nuisance inspector. The contents of your home pantry may help you and your community get through an influenza outbreak, not to mention any number of other disasters. County emergency officials have launched the Stock 2 for Flu campaign. It asks people to buy an extra 2 items with their regular shopping. The goal is to be self-sufficient for up to 2 weeks in case a flu pandemic keeps you from leaving home. But Vito Palazzolo of the Champaign-Urbana Public Health District says the precaution would serve you well in any other emergency.
We can look at natural disasters here that people in Champaign County deal with every year. And so, you know, when we look at it that way, it may be a little bit more easier for them, for our residents to understand that this is a good idea just in general.
Palazzolo says every household that creates a stockpile of food, water, medicines, and other needed items helps clear the way for help to get to people in greater need. A quarterly poll of area employers predicts a healthy hiring picture for the last 3 months of the year in Champaign-Urbana. Manpower Incorporated conducts the poll. The temporary employment firm says 40% of businesses in the area expect to add workers between October and December. 7% of the firms that polled expect cutbacks, while the rest see no change in their hiring. Manpower says that's better than the current quarter and from the same quarter last year. The University of Illinois is looking to make its supercomputers even better, to be precise, about 1,000 times faster than its current machines. The U of I's National Center for Supercomputing Applications is competing for funding from the National Science Foundation. The funds would acquire and deploy a machine that'll make 1 quadrillion computations every second. The so-called petascale computers could look deeper into the building blocks of life and investigate mysteries of the universe. Robert Pennington runs the Innovative Systems Lab at NCSA. He says what currently takes weeks or months could be solved in about an hour with the new system. Pennington says it also means larger simulations are possible.
There was a researcher from Brown University a year ago who had to use systems spread across the country to run an application simply because he didn't have enough memory on any one system that he had access to. And these were the biggest systems at the NSF centers. So with petascale-type systems, these applications, and I mentioned vascular blood flow, which is what this one was simply be done on one machine at one site.
Pennington says the greater speed requires a lot more power to run the supercomputer. It takes about 2 megawatts to run some of its current machines. It requires 30 to 40 megawatts to run the petascale computer. A decision from the National Science Foundation isn't expected until next year. For the latest newscast online, go to will.uiuc.edu/news. This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast. I'm Tom Rogers. There may be some form of legal process for some of the biggest terrorists in United States custody, including one the government calls the mastermind behind the September 11th terrorist attacks. And during this anniversary week, commentator Amy Guida explains that part of the legal process can include victim impact statements. Here's this week's edition of Legal Issues in the News.
Think about these three words, victim impact statement. They really don't have much emotional impact. After all, the word statement often signals a staid, fact-based report, much like a routine business document. But the three words are so much more than that. They give victims of crime the chance to communicate to a court the ways in which their lives have changed, financially, physically, and emotionally. The definitions for victim impact statement from laws across the United States don't sound terribly moving. It suggested that the statements include the extent of and scope of the injury and loss suffered, and the impact that the defendant's criminal conduct has had upon the victim. But such statements can indeed be gripping, moving, and eloquent, all adjectives used by judges to describe the words from the mouths and the pens of people directly affected by a crime. The victims often speak and write from the heart. I can only imagine what language the victims of the September 11th terrorist attacks would use. As Congress argues about the new tribunals and their procedures, I wonder how much say, in a literal sense, the victims ultimately will have. At first, the United States Supreme Court responded to victim impact statements with squeamishness. The argument, in part, is that an emotional plea from victims would sway courts in a way that would be unconstitutional. I remember well a fellow student in law school who asked passionately in a class whether those victims who had no family or hadn't contributed much to society would be worth less in a justice system that promoted victim speech. But 15 years ago, in a case poetically called Pain, the Supreme Court changed its attitude and its mind and found it perfectly acceptable that a grandmother said that her little grandson still asked about and worried about his murdered mother and little sister. Today, then, in a murder case, a mother is able to tell the judge that her dead son appears in her dreams. A hijacking victim can reveal what the crime did to her psychologically, and the victim of a bank robbery stabbing can tell the court that her sense of self within the world is forever changed, and that she's lost her faith, trust, and innocence. Those are all examples of victim impact statements upheld by courts after criminal defendants complained about them. As one court wrote, the statements help the victim become more than a helpless spectator in the criminal justice system, and might even help in a cathartic way to lessen resentment a bit. But I'm not an unbiased observer in the process. I knew a really wonderful guy who died that day in the World Trade Center. I know the sort of thing I would write to a judge. And I'm not even family. I'm Amy Guida.
Amy Guida is an assistant professor of journalism and law at the University of Illinois. A wet couple of days are in the forecast for Illinois and Indiana. Our meteorologist Ed Kieser says in northern and west central Illinois today should be cloudy and cool with scattered showers, elsewhere cloudy with areas of rain and thunderstorms, and highs ranging from 64 in northwest Illinois to 76 in the far south. For tonight, in Illinois, mostly cloudy, scattered showers. In Indiana, cloudy, maybe some thunderstorms with those showers, and lows ranging from 52 in northwest Illinois to 64 in southeast Indiana. Tomorrow in western Illinois, partly to mostly sunny, but elsewhere still cloudy with scattered showers, and highs ranging from 68 in some northern and central Indiana locations to only 75 degrees for a high in southwest Illinois. This has been the AM 580 News Daily Podcast for Tuesday, September 12th. You can find podcasts of Focus 580, the afternoon magazine, agricultural programming, and other helpful information at our website, will.uiuc.edu. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.